all these alternative measurement postulates using tools from representation theory. So what this will give us, actually, is a set of theories, alternative theories, which share certain features with quantum theory. They'll have the same dynamics, for instance, the same pure states, okay, but different measurements. Then what I want to do in these theories is study composition. So what happens when you take two systems and put them together? And I'll show that all these alternative theories violate two principles, the principle of purification and the principle of local tomography, which you might be familiar with if you worked in GPTs a bit. Okay, so that will be the first part of my talk, first two parts of my talk. But after that, I want to discuss how we can modify a bit more than just the measurements, okay? So I want to ask the question, in this framework, how can we modify dynamics, for instance? Consider theories of different dynamics and also theories of different pure states, okay? So that'll be the third part of my talk. It'll be based, it's kind of work in progress slash suggestions for future work. So it won't be any definitive results. I'll show some preliminary things and indicate work from other people. As we have about an hour, I'm going to go into a bit of technical detail. So I also want to show with this talk how we can apply tools from representation theory to GPTs, so to classifying alternative theories and showing properties of alternative theories. Okay, so it will be based, the talk on, so the first two parts are based on these two papers, okay, co-written with Luis Massanes, my supervisor. So it's joint work carried out at UCL. And then the third part of the talk is just suggestions for future work. So, yes, as I said, I've structured this talk in three parts. The first part, I'm just going to look at single systems and how we can modify the measurement postulates. Okay, so I'm going to show how we can do this in a consistent manner, and I'm going to classify all these alternatives. After that, I want to look at bipartite systems. So in these alternative theories, I want to study composition, okay, and I want to look at a bit of informational properties of these theories. Okay, so it's in the good thing about GPTs is studying kind of informational properties, information processing, what happens. Okay. And the final part, I'm going to modify more than measurement. So I'm going to introduce a general framework, and I'm going to use it to study theories which are described by nonlinear Schrödinger equations, and a family of theories which are pure states given by Grassmann manifolds. Okay, yeah. So please feel free to interrupt with questions at any time. And for the last part, if you have any comments or criticisms, obviously welcome. Okay, so before I go about modifying the measurement postulates, I'll just describe quantum theory a bit, okay, this bare bones axioms. So we have up here first the pure states, okay, are given by rays, a complex inertial Hilbert space, and the dynamics are unitary. Okay, so your state psi, you can evolve it to state u psi, where u belongs to sud. Now, number three here tells us about measurements, okay. You might recognize the Born rule. So it tells you that the probability of an outcome for one of your measurements is given by this function here, okay? And so actually, what this postulate tells you, it tells you what all the possible outcomes are, okay? So it tells you that the set of all the possible outcome probability functions, P of F given psi, so I'll just rewrite this here, okay? Oh, you can't see? Yeah.
It's just a reflection from that.
Cool. I'll just finish writing it down. Okay. Okay, good. So really what number three says, it just tells you the set of all allowed outcome probability functions. Okay, so you know that for every single positive semi-definite operator, this is an allowed outcome probability. Okay, and what is a measurement? Measurement has a number of outcomes. Okay, so a measurement then is just a list of outcomes such that P of okay, so I've given you all the possible outcome probability functions, okay, and from that you can tell what measurements are. It's just a set of outcomes which sum to one, okay, and this implies that these sum to the identity. So I haven't included it in the description here. Okay, so what is what I call the measurement structure? Okay, it's just the set of all outcome probabilities, which in turn tells you the set of all allowed measurements, okay? So I'll refer occasionally to set of allowed measurements just to mean set of allowed outcome probability functions. Okay, and in quantum theory, they're given by very specific, all functions of this type are allowed. Okay, and finally, number four, we have something about composition. Okay, so here I'm just talking about pure states. We know that, so a system CDA and a system CDB, the joint pure states of this system live on this tensor product. Okay. So what I'm going to do here is modify 3, which I've called the probabilistic or the measurement structure, while keeping 1, 2, and 4 the same. The first part, I'm going to ignore 4 and just look at single systems. Okay. So before continuing, I want to give you a bit of intuition about what will happen when you change the measurements. Okay, and so the main thing which will change is the set of... Oh, sorry. Before that, I'll tell you how to properly modify them. So, okay, I want to change here number 3. So what I'm going to do is say that outcome probabilities are now arbitrary functions of the pure states, okay? So instead of having a set of functions where the functions are of this form, I'm going to say it's going to be a set of functions where the functions are just f of psi, which here can be arbitrary. It could be set discontinuous functions, okay? It could be a set which includes these functions plus some additional functions, okay? It could be linear in something which isn't psi, the projector. Obviously, I'm just going to constrain that they have to give values between 0 and 1. And now a measurement, once again, is just a list of outcomes such that they sum to 1 for all pure states. Okay, and the measurement structure of a system CD is just a set of all outcome probability functions. Okay? Good. So we're going to impose just one consistency constraint, okay, which follows. So operationally, if I have a transformation followed by a measurement, this defines a new measurement. Okay? So I'm going to impose that if I have a function in that set, composing that function with a transformation should also belong to that set, okay? Just from basic operational, yeah.
Your calligraphic f is basically the tuple of f1 to fn, right?
Oh, sorry. No. Oh, yes, I should have specified. So f1 to fn is a single measurement. This is the set of all allowed outcome probability functions, which includes all the measurements. Sorry, yes. So yes, calligraphic f is defined to be the set of all allowed outcome probability functions, all allowed measurements. Yeah.
In terms of composing systems, can this U act on a larger subsystem? On a larger system, and then it's just preserving a measurement on a subsystem?
So here, I'm not really considering larger systems and subsystems. They're just for a single system. Sorry, yeah, it's composing like sequentially, rather, I should say. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. Later, I'll see what happens.
So all transformations are unitary, basically?
Yeah. Yeah. Here, everything is unitary in SUD. So yeah, I'm just looking at a single system. Okay. Yeah.
So you're not assuming that your outcome probability functions are necessarily closed on a convex mixture, is that correct?
So not at this point, but afterwards, yes, it'll be kind of mixing is one of the assumptions we have. So yeah, yeah, that'll just be part of the kind of operational framework.
Yeah. And am I right in thinking that you are assuming a kind of no restriction hypothesis when you say for any set F1 to Fn such that summary Fi equal to 1, that's a physically realizable measurement.
In that sense, yes. Yes, yes, so far. You could, I guess, artificially take them out if you want, but yeah, it's just, yes, it is a form of no restriction. Yeah.
At that level, you specify the set for each element of, like, for generalized POVM. Is there a difference between saying I'm considering the set of all such elements or the set of all measurements where this is a tuple of things? Like you could define the set at these two levels and you choose like...
Yeah, I just choose at the level of outcomes. So yes, and I'm saying, as Rob said, the kind of the assumption that if some outcomes sum to the identity for all states, then they form a measurement. So I'm kind of allowing that. Though we could remove it if we wanted to, but yeah. Yeah. Okay, good. As an example, I could say that my set calligraphic f contains all outcome probability functions of this form, okay? F of psi is trace. GC have this tensor 2, so probabilities are linear in this tensor 2 object, and f, which here is just Hermitian, and gives values between 0 and 1, and does not need to be a positive operator, as an example. But it could be any function you want so far. Okay, sorry. So this is where the intuition comes in. So far you're probably thinking about it a bit, and I want to make clear that you shouldn't be, in these alternative theories, mixed states are no longer density matrices, okay? The set of mixed states will change. Okay, why is this the case? Actually, maybe...
Yeah.
If I write over here, can people see with it too? Yeah, okay. So, really, the set of... So this is a slice of the Bloch sphere, okay, the set of mixed states of quantum theory. And what information does this tell us? It just tells us that the preparation, okay, 2080 of the 0 and the 1 state corresponds to the same mixed state as the preparation of A and B with 50-50. So it tells me which ensembles are indistinguishable. Okay, you can actually construct the mixed states as equivalence classes of indistinguishable ensembles. Okay, so the mixed states correspond to equivalence classes of indistinguishable ensembles. When I say two ensembles are indistinguishable, I mean that if I give them to you and you only have access to the quantum measurements, you can't tell them apart, okay? If you had access to different measurements, maybe you could tell apart these two different ensembles. Does that make sense? So we'll have different notions of mixed states because different ensembles will be indistinguishable or distinguishable, okay? Okay, yeah. Good, so changing the measurements will mean that ensembles that were previously indistinguishable will become distinguishable. So if you write down a density matrix to correspond to two different ensembles, it might be wrong, okay? Maybe you'll need two different objects. Okay, and there'll be a different set of mixed states, and I'm going to explain exactly how we can derive or construct this set of mixed states in its alternative theory. Okay, so just to be clear, what am I saying when I'm talking about a single system? I know what its pure states are. P is for projective, okay? So a set of rays on CD. I know what its transformations are, SUD, and I know what its measurements are. It's just a set of all these about outcome probability functions. Okay, since the set of mixed states depends on F, we'll need to adopt the convex linear representation. Okay, this is the representation of GPTs, okay? It's the kind of analog to the Bloch representation or the density matrix representation, which admits mixed states. Okay. So instead of, first I just want to highlight a few facts about this representation, which generalize. Good, so. So here you can see on the screen there's the Bloch vector representation, okay? So I have a system, a qubit, so it's pure states PC2, okay? It's dynamics, matrices belong to SUD. And here I've just restricted to PVMs, so outcome probability functions are these quadratic functions, okay? P of A given psi is equal to this inner product absolute value squared. Okay, so we can write the Bloch vector as three outcome probabilities, okay? And the reason we can do this is because every other A, so P of A given psi, I can write it, okay, as a affine or linear, you can think if you want, function of these three outcomes, okay? Does that make sense? So any for a qubit, if you want to compute any probability A for any direction in the Bloch sphere, you can compute it as a linear function or affine function of these three, okay? This is equivalent to saying that if you consider the set of all the outcome probability functions, you can find three functions in this space which provide a basis. Any other function is a linear combination, okay? Okay, so if I can write P of A psi like this, I can then compute P of A psi. I can also write it as, here I've got, yeah, the inner product alpha 1, alpha 2, alpha 3, okay, dot with this vector here, the P of okay, and this here, this dual is what we call an effect of GPTs, okay? So the key point, at the pure state level, this was a quadratic function, but I've gone to a representation where I can write it as an affine function of the states, okay? That's the key point here. So just as before I had rays, now I can write them as vectors in a real vector space. Quadratic functions can be written as affine functions, okay? These are the key facts about the representation in GPTs. Okay, good. And the fact that here there's three entries in this vector is just completely because of the nature of these functions. If I had different functions, I might need a larger number, okay, to write the basis. Good. Okay, and so what happens to the transformations? When you have your block vector here, if you want to go from, let's say, 0 to plus, okay, you apply a 3x3 rotation matrix. So your transformations, your SU2 transformations, okay, which up here are kind of your unitaries. When you go to the block representation, you write them as 3x3 matrices, real matrices. It's called the joint representation of SU2. Okay, so we have a map from group elements to matrices. This map is a representation, okay, because it preserves this group product here, okay? So that clear? So I think what's quite nice to look at is this kind of picture. Pure state level, rays, unitary group, these functions which are kind of, could be anything here, they're quadratic. But then I go to the GPT representation, vectors of real entries, okay? These are representation of the group, and here these are affine functions or linear functions, okay? These two representations, and this is something we're going to use. Okay. Okay, in general. So this is a standard construction of GPTs with what's called fiducial outcomes. So, okay, first, every state. So instead of this being, every state is going to be expressed in terms of a certain number of fiducial outcomes, okay? For the block vector, they're plus x, plus y, plus z, okay? But here, I'm talking about some alternative measurement structure, some different set of functions, okay? And so I've got a set, calligraphic f, of functions. From this set, I pick a finite number of functions such that every other function in the set can be written as a linear combination of those functions. Is that clear? So I've got a set of functions. I pick a basis for that set. This basis I call the fiducial outcome probability functions. And I can then write the state in a similar manner as the block vector in terms of these fiducial outcome probabilities. And now you see that if I want to calculate f of psi, since it's just a linear combination of these, okay, I can just write it as some dual with an inner product. That makes sense? Yeah.
Small question. So here now we introduce linearity.
Yeah.
We didn't have at the level of states.
Yeah.
Does this come directly from the convexity of probabilities?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is, yeah. Yeah, exactly. In this representation, I can write lambda omega psi plus 1 minus lambda omega phi. Yeah, so that's another way of approaching it sometimes. Okay.
Yeah. Answer something you said earlier. Mm. This adjoint representation, is it always faithful? Like, I'm thinking at the level of the unitaries, if I do poly x, poly z, in one order I'll get iy, in the other order I'll get minus iy. So I guess those would be considered different unitaries. But if I go to the adjoint representation,
yeah,
it doesn't matter which order I do them in. So
exactly.
I'm wondering if the group structure is actually different, that when you go to the adjoint representations, it's actually a different group. Like, is it just SO3 in that case, or what?
Yeah, exactly. So what it would be in the adjoint representation is PUD. So projective unitary group, where it doesn't really matter if you have. So for instance, in SUD, identity and minus the identity are two different things. If you go to the adjoint representation, if you act minus psi on either side, it cancels out. So yeah, you've glued together two elements. And this actually is projective unitary group. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So yeah, what we could also do is here I could, because actually in quantum theory at the pure state level, since it's rays, I kind of also should have PUD here. But exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So what have I done here? I've got this set of probability functions. I found a basis for this set, and I can write my states in terms of this basis. The dimension of this space will depend entirely on which functions are in it, right? So different measurement postulates, different sets like this, will give a different number of parameters for your mixed states, okay? Different number of entries here. Okay, so this is the first difference. If you have, depending on which F you have, you'll have a different number of parameters in your mixed state. I've also made a very big assumption here, is that I've said that there's a finite basis for this set, okay? If I told you before you could take arbitrary functions, if you have a bunch of discontinuous functions, you won't have this finite basis, okay? So here I'm already, so the finiteness principle is operationally motivated because since it's just the number of parameters here, it tells you there's a finite number of parameters. You can do state estimation, tomography, etc. Okay? So there is operational justification, but it is a big assumption. Okay. Okay, similarly, I've shown you that there's this representation where I can write states like this, analogous to the block representation. How will these states transform? Okay, because I know that states transform. So, we know that what's called the dynamical structure is preserved. So state psi goes to state u psi. Similarly, the state omega psi, okay, to transform it, you just act on it with some real matrix, okay? Just like the block, you act with a 3x3 real matrix representation. Okay, so every element of the dynamical group, you can map it to some real matrix, which here I call gamma u. Okay, and this, for instance, is just a representation of SUD. Is there any questions about this? Okay. So this just shows that each set F is in correspondence with the representation of SUD. Okay? It's just the representation which acts on the set of mixed states. Okay, I think I've got a summary. Brief summary coming up. So independently of the details, this is a general narrative. If you change the measurements you're allowed, you change the set of mixed states. Okay? The transformations on these mixed states, okay, correspond to representations of the dynamical group, some matrices acting on these mixed states. So different measurements correspond to different representations, okay? So each F is associated to representation gamma of SUD. So this is the first fact. Okay, so now the question is, which representations? I've shown you that choices of measurement give different representations. But if you just pick an arbitrary representation of SUD and ask me, does this correspond to some choice of measurements, it won't necessarily be the case, okay? So what I'm going to now explain is, yes?
Is there some assumption about it being a faithful representation? Like, say, it's sort of the trivial representation where all the group elements are mapped to the identity matrix. Is that included as a special case of what you're talking about?
Yes, that would be a special case where all your measurements give the same outcome. So if all the measurements are functions which are constant, which give one, then it would correspond to that. So yeah, we make an assumption, yeah, which I didn't mention here, is that for any pair of pure states, there exists some outcome probability function which gives a different value for them.
So what does that imply about the representation?
So that
would be trivial?
That would forbid it from being trivial. So if you have the trivial representation, essentially just have one point. Okay, and this
imply more than that? That it has to be faithful, a faithful representation of PUD, for example? So.
Yep, so exactly. So in the case of SU2, in our method, we find some representations which aren't faithful representations of PUD. And in this case, it means that the set of pure states, you can't distinguish, for instance, the 0 and the 1. So orthogonal states are kind of stuck together. So it will have implications. So what we do is we impose the restriction on the allowed measurements that for any psi comma phi, we say there must exist an F such that F of psi equals not F of phi. And then this means that our representations, obviously it gets rid of the trivial one, and the representations must, be faithful to that. So
this would rule out the case where the 0 and the 1 states were indistinguishable, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So those representations where the states are stuck together are still faithful representations of SU2. Okay, yep. But not faithful in the sense that they map pure states to distinct mixed states.
If you had said it has to be faithful to PUD instead of SUD, would that have been enough to rule out this example?
Not sure. I need to think about that. Maybe they are just Yes, maybe if we'd said they have to be faithful to PUD, it would have worked. Yeah, because there's faithfulness on kind of two levels, on the kind of one-to-one between the group elements and the matrices, and then between the states and the representation of the states. And so it's definitely the case that some faithful representations of SU2 don't, if you apply them to a reference state, will map certain states to the multiple pure states to the same state. But yes, I'm not sure if you consider them as PUD, if that helps, might be. I need to think about that. Okay. Okay. Okay, and there's another useful fact, which I won't go into, that there's actually a one-to-one correspondence between the measurements, okay, the sets of measurements, the measurement structures, and the representation, up to restriction. So we've seen the quantum case, it's the adjoint representation. If you restrict to PVMs, it's still the adjoint representation, okay? They're still up to this restriction. Okay. I want to introduce one, I guess, technical notion about group representation theory, this notion of a restricted representation. So, okay, consider the three-dimensional representation of SO3, which is just your rotations in three-dimensional space. Okay, so you've got your 3x3 matrices, and you want to say, okay, I'm just interested in rotations in two dimensions, okay? So from these 3x3 matrices, you select a subset, okay, a subgroup, which are of this form. They have a 1 in the upper left-hand corner, and then they're just SO2 matrices. So what you've just done there is you've restricted the representation of SO3 to a SO2 subgroup. And what you obtain is a reducible representation of SO2. Reducible because I can write it in a block diagonal form, okay? So it's a general fact. In general, it will be the case that you take irreducible representation, only consider a subgroup, and you obtain a reducible, block diagonalizable representation of that subgroup. Okay. Good. So, okay, so now I'm trying to answer the question about which representations correspond to the alternative measurement postulates, okay? And they're the representations which will preserve the dynamical structure. So I'm going to explain this a bit more. So we have the following here, okay? So we don't just have pure states, we have a group action on the pure states. We know that psi goes to u psi, okay? We also know the following, that I'm just going to pick a basis and write psi with the 1 up here and all zeros. This state is stabilized by the following subgroup up here. Okay, so all unitaries of this form leave the state invariant. Yep. And here U can be any matrix in SUD minus 1. You can also stick a phase in front and it'll keep the ray the same. So here, psi equals U psi for all U in SUD minus 1 cross U1, okay? This is a stabilized subgroup. Okay, and you can even write the pure states as the quotient of the dynamical group by the stabilizer. Okay, so this is quite an important fact, okay? Quite an important feature. What does this mean? It means that when I look at the level of mixed states, okay, so gamma here is the representation. If I just consider the elements of this subgroup, they'll leave that state invariant. Because it happened at the Hilbert space level, it happens also at the level of mixed states. Okay? So this state omega psi, here I've just picked a basis. Okay, here this 1 and all zeros is different from here, there's a different dimension. Okay? Will be left invariant by the subgroup elements of this form. So if you think which matrices leave this state invariant, they're the ones which can be block diagonalized with the 1 up here and here some other matrix. Okay. So this means that I take my gamma, my whole representation of SUD, I consider the stabilizer subgroup, okay? I restrict the representation. It must have a 1 in this upper left-hand corner. Okay. So what we need, the representations gamma, which are such that they have a trivial component, it's that 1, when restricted to the stabilizer subgroup. Okay. So now what I can do is I can just look at all possible representations of SUD and look for the ones with this property. And these will be the ones we're after. And this is obtained using something called a branching rule, which just tells you what happens when you restrict representations. And if you like representation theory, it's the representations with this Dynkin index. When J equals 1, it's the adjoint, the quantum, and then the other ones. Okay. Okay, so just to show some pictures. So this is the weight diagram for SU3, the adjoint representation. This is the quantum one. And then the next non-quantum one looks like this, and then they just kind of go like that. So it's kind of nice and symmetrical. Okay. So just to pause before continuing, what we are trying to do here is classify all the sets of allowed measurements, okay? And we kind of, maybe it seems quite, these are kind of sets of functions, but I insisted that we look at representation theory and the representation acting on the mixed states. And the reason why this was a good thing to do is that the representation theory of SUD is well studied, okay? So we could then use existing tools, these branching rules, to get the results, okay? And they're kind of fully general. So we've only assumed finiteness, and then we can classify all possible measurement outcomes. Are there any questions before I continue to composite systems? Okay, so I'm going to focus a bit more on operational constraints. Okay, so in the above, as I said, the sets F weren't completely arbitrary. I insisted that a transformation followed by a measurement is itself a new measurement, and this puts some constraints on F. Composition will impose some further constraints on the allowed sets. So, okay. So here I'm going to consider two systems A and B, which compose the system AB. Now, if I have a measurement on A, okay, and a measurement on B, it's a basic fact about composition that together they should be seen as a valid measurement on AB, okay? This is the first fact. So I'm going to consider three systems. So A, B, and AB, each with their dynamics and their measurements. I'm going to say the fact that A and B compose to AB, what does this impose on the allowed measurements? First of all, it tells me that for every measurement on A and every measurement on B, there has to be a measurement on AB corresponding to just doing both separately. Okay? So technically, an element of A and an element of B, I must be able to put them together to be an element of AB, which on product states is a product. Okay, does that make sense? Okay.
So you're assuming that when you do composition, you tensor, you put the states together in the standard way.
Yep, sorry, yes, I should have said that again.
You don't have to assume that, but that's an assumption.
Yes, that's an assumption. We also maintain the compositional structure of quantum theory. So we also assume at the pure state level that states compose in the same way as quantum theory.
Okay.
And yes, that's something which later on I'll suggest maybe we can get rid of. But yes, that is an assumption. So we also need to take into account a few other things. So for instance, if you look at the diagram, let me redraw it. Okay, here I have product states and a joint measurement. Rather like this. Yeah, okay. So if I look at this whole thing here, this constitutes a measurement. Okay, I've prepared an ancilla and done a joint measurement. Okay, so this also imposes some constraints on the allowed sets of measurements. Similarly, I can do a preparation by steering. Okay, so these considerations will impose some constraints. So the details aren't important. It's rather just that we can translate these operational constraints into facts about the outcome probability functions. Okay, so you can see maybe more clearly here, I've got a pure product state. I apply a joint measurement. This must correspond to some measurement just on the state, okay, for A. Good. Okay, so we can do this whole translation. So essentially, this is how we look at the different ways you can prepare, measure, do all that, and we translate it into this language. Okay, good. So now, for this part, I just want to bring back in some more representation theory. So the question I want to answer is, okay, we've got this notion, we've classified all these possible alternative systems. Which are the ones which can be thought of as a composite system? Okay, a priori, it's not clear if you just have a bunch of systems, can they be thought of composites, one or the other? So we want to kind of establish this fact. So this is just a fact for GPT, which I'm not going to justify, but which is quite intuitive. If you have a system which is the composite, you can write its state omega in two parts. One is locally tomographic, one is holistic. This part you can access just via local measurements. Okay, so Alice and Bob are separated. They have their pair of entangled particles. They have a phone call, okay, the classical communication. They can get to this part. This part they can't obtain in this manner. So every composite state for any theory can be written like this, okay? Locally tomographic, direct sum, the holistic. This will impose some constraints on the global representation acting on these states. So I just want to show this via an example of quantum theory. Okay, quantum theory is holistic. And so I just want to show this state here will be acted on by some global representation of SUDA DB. And I want to show what happens to each of these two parts, or rather just, yes.
Some question, when you go from a single system to a bipartite system, now the groups that the dynamics that we had before, U A and U B, let's say, SU for A and SU for B would be there, but actually now you have more, right? Because you can do a transformation of the whole things.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so I just want to illustrate with quantum theory, which is locally tomographic. So for a quantum system, you can just write it like this, okay? Okay, and I want to just look at the state space of two qubits, and I want to show you a few facts about what happens to the representations acting on this space. So the state of a single qubit, I can write it. Did I write it with an A? Yep. One A, so A is this three-dimensional block vector. One is the normalization degree of freedom. Okay, and the second qubit, I can write 1B. Then the joint state for these two qubits together, I just tensor, okay? And it will give me this expression down here, okay? 1 plus 3 plus 3, that's 7, plus 3 times 3, 9, that's 16, okay? That's the same as your density matrices. Up here, if it's an entangled state or in general, C, they'll just be the kind of correlations, okay? Good. And as I said before, this state is just acted on by this 16 by 16 matrix, okay, all the transformations of SU4. Now I'm going to ask the question, okay, but what happens if instead of considering the whole group acting on it, I just consider the local subgroup, okay? So via SU2 cross SU2. Okay, good. So I'm going to write it here because we already know. We know how this transforms and how this transforms under local action, okay? So I'll write this down first. So here, capital B. Okay, so here, if I want to transform these two qubits separately, I just act with the tensor product of the representations. The one up here is just for the normalization degree of freedom. This is the adjoint 3x3 representation of SU2, adjoint 3x3. Okay? Good. if I write this out in full matrix form, it's like this, okay? Okay, there's a lot of text on here, but it's just saying, I was saying before, so I've looked at the global group and I just restricted to the local subgroup, okay? And I can see that it acts in this manner, okay? So we have, quite obviously, we just have B acting on B, A on A, and A tends to B on A tends to B. Okay, so it means that if I take the global group and I restrict the local subgroup, there's a trivial of each, okay? Here I've added in some trivial representations. Trivial tends to B, plus A tends to trivial, plus A tends to B. This is a representation of SU2 cross SU2. Is this general idea kind of clear, or do we have questions so far? Okay. So it's a general feature, which I won't show, that the action of the local subgroup on the locally tomographic subspace on here always has this decomposition, okay? So it's always of the form, so trivial of SUDA, trivial of SUDB, plus trivial of SUDA tensor, some representation of SUDB, some representation of SUDA tensor the trivial, plus this, and so this, okay? Which just means that the matrix can be written like this, okay? I've just written it in a few more gammas and stuff, but it's just this. Okay, good. So every composite system, you take its global representation, you look at the local subgroup, it has some term like this. Now, in the case of quantum theory, because it's just locally tomographic, you don't have anything else, okay? In general, you'll have some other term stuck onto the end. Okay? So here, this will be a necessary criterion. I've got a system with these pure states, these transformations, some measurements. It's got associated to it a representation. If this system is a composite, then necessarily, this is just a technical way of restricting the representation, the restriction of the representation to the local subgroup is of this form. Okay. And if it's locally tomographic, it's only of this. There's nothing else on the end. Okay? So I found a criterion for composition, and plus I can also, if it composes, tell you if it's locally tomographic or not, just by looking at this restriction here. Okay? There's another application of branching rules. Yep.
It's not a sufficient condition for composition.
No, it's not sufficient. Exactly. It's just necessary. Because, yeah, for instance, this doesn't tell you at all, okay, let's say it meets this necessary condition. Once you take the partial trace, I mean, you could have anything in the subspace, okay? It could not necessarily be something with the correct pure states dynamics. So yeah, exactly, it's just necessary. Okay, good, so that's all the tools. So this branching rule is quite a lot harder to study than the previous one. So in this case, we've just done it for SU9. We've shown that all the representations of SU9, which correspond to alternative Born rules, have a locally tomographic part, okay? So they have this, like this, and they also have an extra term. So all systems with alternative measurement postulates violate local tomography. That's the first claim. Okay, we made the slightly, it's a bit cheeky to say all theories. All theories have systems, so a theory has a system for every D. Since all theories have systems C9, they all violate local tomography. I mean, yeah, take that as you want, okay? But I mean, okay, I haven't included it. I've also shown it for 12 and 15. Every time we've got kind of an inductive proof, so we just need to find the two lowest for every D, but see, we'll stop at some point. So, yeah. Anyway, so it also seems likely to us that all D where D is not prime would have this. Okay. Good. So that's the first feature. The second one is lack of purification. So all systems with alternative Born rules violate the purification postulate. The purification postulate just tells me that any local state, okay, any local mixed state, I can interpret it as the reduced state of some larger pure entangled state, okay, or pure state if it's pure. Okay, and this is just a picture. So we have a toy theory. Tell you what I've done is I've looked at a system. So this is alternative qubit, if you want. I've projected the state space just down onto here. All the pure states are on this curved line. We've got the one state and the zero state here. These blue states can be obtained by taking a partial trace, okay, by the reduced states. But all these systems here can't, okay? So these are local mixed states, which you can't obtain as a reduced state of a pure state, larger global pure state. Okay. Good, okay, so I think that's it in terms of technical stuff. So now just a few implications. And yeah, feel free to contribute. So the first interesting thing about lack of purification is that there's some notion of irreducible classicality. Okay, so if I, in quantum theory, if I send you a mixed state, you can't tell if I've sent you half an entangled particle or if I've sent you some preparation or I've been flipping a coin, okay? You just can't tell. In these theories, there are some states where I send you this state, you can tell me immediately. You can only have done that by flipping a coin and sending me something, okay? So you've got this irreducible classicality present in this theory. So in a certain sense, the quantum measurement postulates are the most non-classical. We can also arrive at this conclusion from a state space dimension argument. Yeah, maybe I won't go into that. If you're interested, we can talk about it later. Okay, and another fact, so here you'll have noticed I've been talking about alternative Born rules, alternative measurement postulates. What I haven't suggested is that we try and derive them. So there's lots of papers in the literature trying to derive them. So Deutsch and Wallace from like decision theoretic considerations. There's Jurek from kind of invariance and some symmetries of entangled states. So here, since all alternatives violate purification, we can single out or derive the Born rule from the purification postulate. So what you'd have to do is say the pure states are like this, the transformations are like this. You want to have purification, you can only have the Born rule. Plus operational assumptions, okay? So I've assumed that there exist preparations and transformations. Okay.
Good question.
Yeah.
One of the things that makes the purification postulate so natural is that if I imagine I can sort of move the cut between what I treat as an internal degree of freedom, what I treat as an external degree of freedom arbitrarily, then this whole coin flipping procedure can be considered as just another interaction between two systems.
Yes.
And so so when you say I can only implement this by flipping a coin, does it mean that in your theory there is a kind of cut that cannot be moved, that there are certain systems which, like coin flips, which I cannot actually model as other degrees of freedom in the theory, which couple unitarily to the...
I think that would be a way of viewing it. Yeah, there are some preparations which I can't see as some larger unitary interaction. And I think that's true of any theory which violates purification. Yeah. I don't know, has anyone else who studied purification, would you agree with that statement? Or how would you? So I'm looking directly at you, John, because I know you use it a lot. Like, if you don't have purification, yeah, I took it to mean there's some preparations which you can't obtain by like a partial trace, which you can't obtain as like some larger transformation.
So if you want to obtain a state like that, do you have to get it from like outside the theory?
Using classical probability theory, yeah. But in GPTs, the thing is, we already assume that like there just is classical theory plus some extra stuff.
Maybe a way of saying what is undesirable about such a theory is that you sort of presume the possibility of doing classical mixtures as kind of external intervention. And yet the internal structure of your theory doesn't have the capacity to model that.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it does seem a bit of a failure. If you wish to model your classical apparatus and world using this system, then yeah. Yeah.
And so it suggests that there's a respect in which these theories don't contain the full classical theory, is that correct?
There's a notion in which you have to impose it from the outside.
But do they have like a classical sub-theory sitting inside them in some way? Like in quantum mechanics, we have classical things that sit inside of it, but we also have this purification postulate.
Yeah.
But here, can we prove that there's sort of no classical state and effect space embedded inside the effect spaces of these guys?
I think it's... So you can definitely have, if you have a system with two distinguishable states, you can definitely have like a bit state space living in it. But then when you think about it, in terms of having things decohere to that bit state space, it seems a bit less natural. So I'd say, yeah, there definitely is classical theory in the sense that you can encode classical information in these systems, but it's definitely not as nice as quantum theory. For instance, we showed it violates bit symmetry, things like that, which says that all pairs of perfectly distinguishable state for a two-level system are like equivalent. So there's like two different types of logical bits encoded in these systems with two distinguishable states, for instance. So it seems that some of them are kind of nice and classical, others it's a bit strange. Yeah, but this is just kind of intuitive level. I don't have a rigorous notion. Yeah. Okay, I just want to discuss a few limitations of what I've told you. So as was pointed out, the claims that all alternatives violate local tomography and purification are conditional, okay? I haven't shown that these systems compose. I've shown that they meet a necessary condition for composition, okay? So we do have one toy model. So at least one amongst all the alternative composers, okay? So what might be interesting is this toy model, for instance, is highly restricted in terms of the effects, and all effects are noisy, okay? So it gets a lot more of the nice properties. So we've seen that none of them obey local tomography, none of them obey purification, which is kind of nice. Also, this one has just noisy effects, so okay, gets rid of a lot of the kind of niceness of GPTs. So I guess this niceness might be conditioned by the fact we're used to quantum theory, so maybe a good feature. And as I said, the lesson from representation theory is, in general, for single transitive systems, we can do everything using representation theory. For composites, we can obtain these necessary conditions, but then you have to get down to the nitty-gritty of determining what the unit effect is, taking partial traces, and all that. Okay. Okay, and this current question we're asking is, this toy model only works for bipartite systems. It's non-associative. Do any alternative measurement postulates compose beyond bipartite systems? Okay, so I want to talk a bit about implication for work on GPTs. So there's quite a few results which show general properties of all theories which obey local tomography, okay? Or they assume purification and show some general features of theories. So these are quite natural assumptions for many reasons and also quite convenient. But here, what's quite interesting is there's this infinite family of theories obtained just by modifying one of the axioms of quantum theory which don't obey these, which fall outside of these results and are general intuitions about general probabilistic theories. So there's a recent result by Kieran and John showing that any theory which decoheres to quantum theory in an analogous manner that quantum theory decoheres to classical, so any potential successor theory must violate either purification or causality or both. Okay. So I'm not going to claim that these alternatives are successor theories, but they at least match this nice condition. Okay, so we have another reason to believe that. Okay. Actually, I've taken up most of the hour, so I might just present one of these two alternatives, not both, okay? I'll do it quite quickly, and you can always ask questions if you want to know more. So, this method I've suggested, where we look at pure states, dynamics, measurements, find representations of mixed states, is actually more general than that. So what I can do is I can just say, my pure states are some set X, my dynamics are some group acting on the pure states, and the measurements are just some functions from the pure state to the 0, 1 interval. Okay, and for technical reasons, transitivity is desired. So, I mean, this is nothing really new or revolutionary. It's just a GPT for a single system with emphasis on the pure states and dynamics, okay? And similarly, all the tricks I showed about classifying all these sets, about showing local tomography, carry over just with a different group and subgroup. Okay. Okay. I just want to give one example of how you could maybe use this. So how do you obtain the states, the pure states of quantum theory? You take CD. Can you take all the rays, all the one-dimensional subspaces? So you could ask yourself, why not just take all k-dimensional subspaces? Okay, so your pure states, you build them out of CD, but using all the k-dimensional subspaces. And you define a Grassmann manifold, okay? Then I just defined it as all the subspaces of a given dimension. And this is acted on quite nicely by unitary group. Okay, all I'll say is we can do the same classification as for the alternative Born rules. This one I was quite lucky, I actually found it in a paper somewhere, so I didn't even have to compute it. And we've got a notion of composition. And actually, it turns out that Likowsky's quantum theory corresponds to one of these Grassmann manifolds in the joint representation. But I think as John also showed, they don't really compose. So yeah, still need to find an example that composes. And there's a further generalization. Okay, so I think what I'll do is I'll skip the nonlinear Schrodinger equations. Okay, so I'll just sum up. So what have I shown you? I've shown you how we can classify all possible measurement postulates, which are these sets F, just using representation theory and representation theoretic criteria properties. I've studied composition in these alternative theories, so I've introduced what constraints did drawing these diagrams impose on the sets F, and I also told you about this kind of necessary condition for composition. This then allowed us to show that all these alternatives violate two operational properties, the purification principle and the local tomography principle. It's quite interesting because both of which feature in reconstructions of quantum theory quite often. Okay, so in the Pavia group approach, purification kind of holds a big place. So then this kind of approach can be generalized further. So it's kind of a general framework for dealing with any transitive theory. Once again, it's just emphasis on pure states and dynamics. And I've suggested some examples of theories with modified pure states. I skipped the one with modified dynamics, but they exist. And yeah, I'll finish there. Thank you.
Fitting with Gleason's theorem, he proves the Born rule with a set of assumptions. Just compare with your work.
Yeah, so Gleason's theorem is nearly the kind of opposite to what we're doing, in the sense that the assumption is that frames in your Hilbert space, so orthogonal bases, correspond to measurement outcomes, and then shows that you should have density matrices as your states in that rule. So here we're kind of doing the opposite. We're assuming what the pure states are, and we allow the measurements to be anything. And specifically, I mean, our measurements are no longer associated to POVM elements or these frames. But it's kind of starting from the opposite consideration.
Yeah. You could have done it the opposite way from the way you did it. And Gleason could have proved his theorem in the opposite way that he did, assume something about the structural states and derive.
Yeah.
And there, I think the critical assumption which you're failing to satisfy is what Gleason's notion of non-contextuality, that the, if I have an assignment to a sum of two pure states, or a mixture of two pure states, it doesn't depend on which mixture I use. So it depends only on the overall density matrix and not on the ensemble.
But he breaks mixtures, and he says the mixtures are no longer the right things to use.
Well, in this theory, the two different ensembles don't yield the same statistics.
Right.
So that would be the assumption of Gleason's theorem that would be violated.
Yeah. Yeah. So ensembles which previously in quantum theory yielded were the same predictions wouldn't in this case. Yeah. Okay. And yeah, we need this to be able to consistently have theories. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The example of the Grassmannian manifold. Mm.
Yeah.
Seriously, if I think of all the two-dimensional spaces, for example, let's say I'm in a four-dimensional C4, and then I'm thinking about the pure states as the two-dimensional subspaces. Could I have thought of them as, oh, they're the things that are stabilized by SU2?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just taking the quotient of SU4 mod SU2, that's defining the pure states.
Yeah, exactly. So SU2 cross SU2 in this sense, because exactly. You've got this SU2 here, which just maps elements of this subspace to itself. But here you've also got to complete the matrix another SU2. But yeah, exactly. You can characterize it in this way. Yeah. And it's kind of part of the definition. I mean, you can view it because it's a, yeah. Just as you can view the one-dimensional subspaces as being the quotient of SUD and SUD minus 1 cross U1. But yeah. Yeah. And I think in general, so here I kind of gave it this way, but this characterization is kind of nicer, and it's easier than to just pick a group, stabilize a subgroup, quotient, you have your set of states, which works for any transitive.
This, I should think this is kind of one example of generating a group subgroup pair that has some kind of interpretation in the quantum framework.
Yeah.
It's not so far, but.
Yeah, exactly. It's not too far apart, and we can kind of think about it. And actually, this exists within quantum theory as so some density matrices. If you take if you take a pure state and apply all the transformations, you have a manifold which is PCD, so the complex vector space. But if you take a density matrix which has a certain redundancy in its eigenvalues, and you apply the whole group, you'll generate this type of manifold, for instance. So that's what a lot of the geometry of quantum states type people do. So yeah. So for instance, in this case here, if I take, so this is quantum theory, I have this density matrix here, a half, a half, zero, zero. If I act on it by that subgroup, U dagger, U1, 2, it leaves it invariant. And then if I were to act with the whole SU4 group on either side, I'd generate that manifold. And that's also Zukowski's quartic quantum theory. It just takes some of the sets of mixed states and considers them as the pure states. And then, I mean, it doesn't compose, but yeah. It's a way of constructing theories.
So whenever you were talking about mixed states in this theory, you boiled it down to distinguishability, right? There's some quantum tasks where having a composite system helps you distinguish, such if I give you one of two channels, then having a larger Hilbert space, whatever, will help you distinguish. So my question is, if you want to talk about distinguishability, does it make sense to talk about composite systems? Because now you're talking about weird GPT stuff where anything can happen. So maybe having this larger composite system and being able to apply a larger unitary, a larger measurement or something might help you distinguish. So I guess to boil it down, you talked about mixed states at the beginning and then later talk about composite systems.
Yeah.
Maybe you should talk about composite systems first and then talk about distinguishability and then come back to mixed states or...
I'd say that in general, the kind of convex shape you obtain for a single figure, so for instance, the qubit, should encode all possible information about the kind of what happens when you include it in some more general composite system. Okay, so for instance, you can kind of tell just from looking at the qubit state space that you can't do cloning. Okay, because otherwise you could take two states that are very close together, clone them infinitely many times and perfectly distinguish them. And then the figure that you had shouldn't have been a qubit, should have been something different. So there is already, that kind of, I'm trying to think about how to address it. So
you're thinking that you, for distinguishability, you may not need larger Hilbert spaces?
For distinguishability of ensembles, like if a, yeah, so for instance, for a single quantum system. Yeah, if two ensembles are indistinguishable for a single quantum system, it won't help to add additional systems and do them. You can always see them as just effects on the qubit, right? Or are you?
Yeah, I agree in quantum. Yeah.
Okay. And so.
Maybe you have some weird GPT or something, or you start.
Yeah, so the thing is, if you had some weird GPT, it would then mean that your initial state space was wrong, and it kind of wouldn't compose, in a sense, kind of breaks the language of it.
Okay. So everything seems to work out.
Yeah, I think it works. Yeah, it works out. So it's quite hard to phrase, because in a sense, when you say that if something different happens when you compose it, and you don't actually have the same indistinguishable ensembles, then it kind of means that you shouldn't have composed them at the start, in a sense. Just the same as if you compose something, you get signaling. It's more a failure of your composition than actual signaling. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
You said there is some correspondence between these sets of measurements or sets of outcomes and representations of your dynamical group. And so I suppose that's up to some kind of equivalence. So maybe on the representation side, up to some isomorphisms. What would that be on the side of the outcome sets?
Yeah, exactly. So if you write your representation as a matrix, it's always the same representation up to L. You know, you can multiply on either side by L minus one. And that, in terms of the sets you have, would more translate as when I write down my vector, a certain number of fiducial outcomes. It just depends which basis I choose. So which basis I choose as a set corresponds to this transformation. That makes sense. So yeah, this equivalence of representations corresponds to just a basis choice.
So, okay, so it doesn't actually change the set of outcomes.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't. It doesn't change. Yeah, which is good, because otherwise it would mean that the choice of basis for your representation would correspond to different outcome sets, and you wouldn't have this nice correspondence. Yeah, exactly.
No more questions. Let's thank Tom again.
Thank you.